This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. My newest fantasy series is going strong. Readers have enjoyed Diamond Stained, and now Oban and Avena return for their fourth story, and things have never been more perilous. They have survived the chaos of Cash, explored the dark mysteries of the Ruby Ruins, and protected the Obsidian Mind. Now Oban must find the Emerald Strength, or be crushed by his enemies. Diamond Stained, Ruby Ruins, Obsidian Mind, and Emerald Strength are all out on Amazon in free and Kindle Unlimited. Today, I'm joined by Eileen Mueller, the fantasy author of Riders of the Fire series. Her new releases, Sea Dragon and Ruby Dragon, have just come out today.
How are you doing, Eileen?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. How is it in New Zealand tomorrow?
It's cold, and yeah, it is tomorrow. It's we're always a day ahead here. We see the sunshine first. We have the dawn before anyone else. And it's always very confusing when I'm booking podcasts to make sure I turn up on the right day. It's cold and wintry today. How is it over there?
It's hot and summery. I have my fan off, so we have good quality audio, and hopefully the readers will appreciate, or the listeners will appreciate my sacrifice.
So you're going to be sweating it out while I'm sitting here freezing.
Exactly. So I always like to start out with some fun questions. Do you like elves or dwarves more?
I think because I'm short, I really like dwarves because I can identify with them. However, I sort of like the culture of the elves, so I guess I'm a fence sitter on that one.
Okay.
If it came to Gimli or Legolas, yeah, I think I like them both equally as much.
Yes, that's a good
What about
answer.
You?
I'm a dwarf person.
You're a dwarf person. Are you short as well? Are you short as well, or do you just like mining?
No, I'm really tall. I like the culture. I don't know. I just like dwarves. I've always resonated with dwarves. If I'm playing D&D and you give me an option to races, I will be a dwarf 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, I'd probably choose elf out of vanity.
So, what is your favorite color for a dragon?
Oh, look, I think Zerusha, who is Azara's dragon, she's a dragon queen. I think she's my favorite because if you imagine something like titanium, a metal that reflects all the colors in the rainbow, then in my mind, that's what her scales look like with sort of a golden sheen over them. When the artist went to render the dragon, I'm like, could you color every scale individually? I'm sure you can't, right? And he just laughed. So she has a smattering of colors all over her body. But in my mind, that's what she looks like. Every single scale reflects all the colors.
Like Mother of Pearl?
Yeah, like Mother of Pearl or, you know, titanium metal that is purpley, blue, green, yellow, sort of. I don't know if you've seen titanium like that, but it used to be.
I feel like I have it. I keep thinking titanium is silver, so.
Yeah, but it has a sheen, like it gets the different colors. So, and I remember they used to do a range of titanium jewelry. I won't tell you my age, but many, many years ago. And they all reflected all those rainbow colors, and I absolutely loved them. Yeah.
All right. So, Eileen, when did you know you wanted to be a writer?
I think when I was a kid, but I didn't do anything about it. My mum was a poet and a bit of an artist, but nothing really famous. And then she won a few awards and things. And I always thought that was cool. But my parents divorced and my dad always said that fiction was secondhand fantasies. Why would you read those? They're just secondhand fantasies. Dad has completely turned around. He now says to me, how's your book business going? And he thinks it's quite cool. So that's neat. But I always read like crazy. I wrote a lot as a teenager. And it wasn't until a friend gave me some very badly written but very good stories. They were romance stories. They were written really badly. Like there were things were repeated. So she sort of hammered the readers over the head with the facts. But she actually told a really good story. And I thought, man, I could edit these. And then she said, well, she's inspired me to write. And then she sent me her manuscript. I read hers and it was good. It was really good. And I thought, I could do this. So that was sort of when my desire to write actually started. So her and I were writing together and just passing each other scenes and talking about our plots and things. And that was about 11 years ago.
That's pretty cool.
And I started writing Azara. And never, ever thought, well, I dreamed I would be published by, you know, Big Five, as everyone does when they start out. But I never thought, it would, I just somewhere along the line, I thought, oh, this is never going to happen. And when I started indie publishing, it took off, and it was just, it was really good. I was just so thrilled.
Nice. So Azara, she's your heroine. I was reading your blurb, and so her life looks like it changes pretty dramatically when she imprints Zarusha, the Dragon Queen. So I'm just curious, what exactly is the imprint? What entails in that?
Sorry, say that again.
What exactly? What's
printing.
What does she get out of the imprinting? What is the effect of it? You know.
Okay, so she's never seen a dragon before. So when she first sees this dragon, and she's not even sure if they exist, and beforehand, this is the very first chapter, she's in the marketplace and someone shows her some cloth with dragons on it, and she's absolutely fascinated, but it's contraband, so she has to hide it. And there's this whole culture in Lush Valley that even though dragons exist outside Lush Valley, all the people within Lush Valley aren't sure anymore, because for a couple of generations, they've... The people who've been in charge of the area have had a prejudice against dragons, and they used to kill them if they came near. So the dragons have kept away, which is a shame, because the dragons are the protector of the realm, and they make sure that none of the nasties get in. And they haven't succeeded. So war is about to break out. But anyway, so things change very dramatically in Lush Valley. But you don't get to see that until book two, because in book one, Azara starts out in Lush Valley and then she's gone. She's gone by the end of the first chapter. And we don't get to see anything about what's happening to her family until book two. So when she sees the dragon, to get back to your question about imprinting, it's a physical sensation, it's an emotional bond, and also she has a rush of adrenaline or energy, because they didn't know what adrenaline was back then, and leaps upon this dragon. And she just knows it's absolutely right, and she has quite a strong imprinting experience. So I guess what I've tried to do when I've created the imprinting experience is I've used slightly different imagery for each person, depending on what their background is.
Okay, that's pretty good,
yeah. Yeah, so for her, she sees like a rush of colours and just feels absolutely swept up and sort of hears amazing music, sort of, you know, it was like the sweetest music sort of thing from the purest flute, and off she goes, leaps on the dragon. There you go, I've given you the spoiler for chapter one now. But it's a really strong sensation, and usually accompanied by the urge just to get on the dragon and go fly.
All right.
And it's a very deep bond. So they share emotions, they have telepathy, and they sense each other's emotions and thoughts when they want to share them.
Okay. Sounds really neat. So she gets trained by someone, a dragon master, according to your blurb, who might be worse than her enemies.
Yeah,
this is a very intriguing character. what can you tell us about him or her?
Roberto is a favorite of a lot of my readers. He's a person with a very dark past. His father sold him to the enemy, Commander Zenz, when he was young. We didn't sell him. There was no money involved, but his father basically was corrupted by the enemy and gave his son to the enemy to train as a protege. So Roberto has learned some formidable mental skills, including mental torture, at the enemy's hands, and all of that comes out over the book. So, you know, there's a lot of rumors going around at Dragon's Hold, which is where she trains, about, you know, whether he's still a traitor, whether he's not, all those sort of things. But basically, he's put in a lot of hard graft to earn his position back. But do you think he trusts anyone after being sold out by his dad?
No, I can see why he might have some trust issues there. just a little bit.
Yeah, except when he goes to test her, he discovers how pure her bond is. So he's determined to throw her out. She's come from Lush Valley. She knows nothing. She's ignorant. There's absolutely no way she could possibly be an adequately qualified Queen's Rider. She doesn't even know if dragons exist. And he's determined to throw her out. But when he tests her, he gets a surprise and realizes, you know, how pure her bond is with the Dragon Queen. And there's a whole lot of reasons for that which come out in book two. So I can't tell you.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
In fact, I had
readers... want to spoil everything, yep.
Yeah,
I just want to tantalize.
Yeah, exactly. I had readers persistently ask me, what was the dragon doing in Lush Valley? So I've saved that tidbit, and that comes out in book five. People actually there were little hints of it, but people hadn't picked it up. So I thought, right, that was too subtle. So in book five, I made sure that moment got explained, you know. So it was quite cool.
All right. So I noticed that one of the enemies, they're humanoid monsters called Thoraks. I thought was a really great name, by the way. When I saw that, I was like, oh, that's a very evocative, you know, sort of ogreish orc name.
Yeah, we did it on I remember standing there trying to use syllables that sounded rough, you know, Tharok.
Yeah. So I was curious to learn more about them, you know. Are they just like bad guys? Do they have a culture? You know, what's their deal?
Okay, so I have to tell you a little bit about their creator. So Commander Zenz is a person who's come through from Earth from 2050. None of this comes out until the end of the book, so lots of spoilers here. But Commander Zenz has come through a world gate, and he creates these monsters. And basically, the people in this world, because it's a medieval world, say that he grows them like plants, and they're genderless. So that was actually it's in the world, that they don't have a male or female gender, because he actually just creates them fully whole. So there's no need for them to breed. And they stand upright. They have faces like warthogs with big tusks or small tusks, and they're furry. But they have big claws, which they can retract. So they have, prehensile thumb and fingers like humans. They can use, they can use bows and arrows and do all those sorts of things. They like to wear breastplates and boots, but they don't really need them. But that's sort of what they wear. And they stomp around. Basically, he's trained them that humans are evil and that dragons are awful. And they basically go around killing for him. And he has an ulterior motive. He's in Dragon's Realm because there are precious resources there that he wants, but that comes out over the series of the books. And Zenz is an interesting character because he's been genetically experimented on by his parents, which made him interesting, and he's also a scientist, so he knows how so he basically genetic engineers all these monsters. But all of this comes out over the course of the series, and you discover lots of things about him that make him maybe slightly more sympathetic. But he's pretty evil. Does he have a redeeming moment? I think there are a couple in there, but not a lot.
All right, fair enough.
So basically, the entire series is a battle against him and the Tharoks and how they can purge them from Dragon's Realm. Yeah.
So is parenthood a theme in your book? Because you have two characters here who have parents that betrayed them. So I'm just, is that a conscious theme, or did that just like come out naturally?
I also had two parents who were amazing, and they actually feature as main characters as well. So when I wrote this series, I was considering the effect of parents on kids and the different ways that people can come out. And the two characters who have parents who betray them end up being completely different characters. So I was exploring the way that choice, you know, there's nature and nurture.
Yeah.
But also that personal choice and the way that you process those emotions can determine the outcome of your life. So Roberto and Commander Zenz had similar experiences, but they chose to use things differently. Yeah.
Okay.
Use their experiences differently.
Okay, yeah. That's pretty cool. That's one of the fun things about fiction, to, you know, explore themes and ideas that, you know, that maybe you don't have in your own life, but you can examine through your writing and, you know.
Yeah, well, I have quite a few friends who were abused as children in various ways, and I've seen the different ways that can affect people. And it's a very difficult, fraught topic, so I don't want to risk saying anything that could, upset someone. So I think each person's experience is very personal, and I've seen some people sort of rise above that abuse and be able to process it and go through therapy and whatever they've needed to do to move on and sort of, you know, rise like phoenixes out of the ashes. And then I've seen other people whose lives have been destroyed by it. And I don't think it's necessarily always a personal, you know, I think it depends. There's a whole factors influence that. But I wanted to explore in this book, the resolution of two very different characters and to see how the outcome, see how it turns out. So, and there's a few interesting twists right at the end of Dragon War when those two characters have to face each other again and figure out. They face each other a few times during the series, but right at the end there's a few little interesting twists there. So it makes for fun developing characters that have a range of emotions and reactions.
Well, yeah, that does. So let's talk a bit about your Dragon Queen. I mean, what's her personality like?
So sometimes she's a bit like a mother hen, clucking over Sarah. She when her last rider died, Anakisha, she didn't take another rider for nearly 19 years until Azara was sort of, 17. Okay. And I think it's 18 or 19. And then she knew that there was another rider out there for her and that nobody else was right. So I think she's fiercely loyal. When her queen's rider died, they set up a dragon council to help her rule because she lost her mate and his rider and the queen's rider all got lost at once. So the king dragon and the king's rider, Cyan and Yania, also were lost in battle to Commander Zenz, and Zerusha established a council. So sometimes she's sort of shackled by what the council decides, and other times she just overrules them and says, this is it, I'm putting my foot down. And there are moments where she has lapses in judgment, and some of those happen in the first book in Azara, where, Azara has to decide if she's going to go against Dragon Queen's will and do something that she believes is better. So there's some, it makes for interesting conflict when you've got a monarch. It wasn't perfect.
Yes, I'm writing that actually right now, my current work in progress, where my protagonist, she's got herself engaged to a king, and she's embroiled in a civil war now.
Oh, boy. That's got to be interesting.
Yeah.
Does the king always make good decisions?
No. Well, he's very idealistic, and his idealism is not necessarily matches up with reality sometimes.
So he's not that practical.
No, he's a dreamer.
And does she have her feet on the ground?
She's kind of, at the moment, she gets swept up in his dream, but I think she's starting to realize that there's some problem, so we'll be getting into that in the next book. Not really, this book she's more focused on just trying to keep them alive.
Yeah, that's good. Survival is always a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I know you have an upcoming prequel series to Riders of the Fire. What can readers expect from it?
Okay, so Riders of Fire Dragon Masters. I'll just take a step back, actually. So Riders of Fire is my main series, which encompasses Azara, Dragon Hero, Dragon Rift, Dragon Strike, Dragon War, and then Sea Dragon. And Sea Dragon is launching today, and that's a really cool story. It's about a girl called Ithsar who trains with a group of silent assassins in the desert, and her mother has always hated her because her fingers were malformed at birth, and so she can't fulfill her dreams of, being an assassin. Azara heals her fingers in book one, so people who read that know that. But Ithsar turns up somewhere in the very last battle to help. And so she turns up with a dragon. So I figured that people need to know the story of how she got a dragon. And in that book, it ties up a few threads that have been dangling throughout the series. Like, there's a few things I've left dangling, and Sea Dragon actually ties those up really nicely. And some of those relate to the former Queen's Rider, Anakisha, who was lost in battle before Azara, 19 years before Azara's story began. So I was intending on publishing some of those stories after, in the same series, and having Riders of Fire go to 9 or 10 books.
Okay.
But it didn't make sense to finish on 4 books that led into book one. Does that make sense? So anyone who started at the beginning of the series when it was published or has read them now would go, oh yeah, more books. Oh, that's what happened. But anyone who was coming in later, I wanted to give them the opportunity to start with the prequels and then move through to Azara and read everything in order. So, that's what's happening. So there's so much of the backstory developed as I was writing these books that I went up to the university a few days ago with 2 of my readers, and we picked out all the facts. So we had to work backwards and, label one of the years 100 or something and work backwards and figure out the timeline for all the prequels. And we had like one line, everything happening in one year was the books Azara all the way through to Sea Dragon. I think it encompasses a few months, the whole series. So it's really jam-packed. And then the prequels, they go back They go back years and years, and we had this massive whiteboard that reached from the floor all the way to the ceiling, and there were four whiteboards, so they were way bigger than me, and we were climbing on chairs writing stuff all the way back to the top of the whiteboards, and there was a Zara's bit at the bottom. So there was a whole lot of rich backstory that developed during, you know, during the process of writing the series, and I wanted to do it justice. So we so we decided to write Dragon, or I decided to write Riders of Fire Dragon Masters, which is some of the masters on the council and some of the ones who are deceased, and actually how they, you know, how Zens came into the world. So the first book is Anakisha's Dragon, which is the story of Anakisha, the former Queen's Rider. The second one is Dragon Mage, which is Master Giddy, who broke the world, opened the world gate and let in Commander Zens and the Tharoks. And the third one is Dragon Spy, who's Master Tonio, who is he seems like a bit of a bad character throughout throughout Riders of Fire, but he's actually not. He has a really good heart. So I wanted to tell his story. And then the last one is Dragon Healer, which is a really beautiful story of Marlies and Hans, who are Azara's parents, and how they fell in love and came to have this daughter who was destined to be Queen's Rider. So, yeah, and there's a bit of an interesting flip there. So, yeah, that's cool. So then it will finish. It'll finish with, Azara being born, and then bang, people can go into the series 20 years later, or 17. So it just made sense.
Good plan.
So today we're launching Sea Dragon, which is quite cool. And I've got a big party over in my Facebook group, Riders of Fire group, so I'll give you the links to that. And we're also launching Ruby Dragon, which is a little short story. It's 10,000 words long, a bit over 10,000. And that is Master Tonio, the Dragon Spy. It's the story of how he met his dragon. So I have a few little novelettes, and I think that's the third one. That's a short story. But I also have two novelettes of how Marlies and Hans, Azara's parents, met their dragons. So, and some of those are up for free on my site too. So, it gives readers a taste of the style and the world, and, you know, without having to invest anything, they can go and read those. And, yeah, so it's quite cool to launch two books at once. I don't normally do that. It's lots of fun.
Yeah, it does seems like you're going to have a very busy day.
Yeah, and it's lots of fun. We've got giveaways over in the in my group, and games happening all day and things. So between noon Eastern time to 9:30 at night Eastern time, which sort of means Michael Evans doing the first shift while I'm asleep, and then I'll be on from 8 a.m. my time through to about 1:30 my time, which is 9:30 ET. And by then Michael will be saying ciao and going to bed, and I think that'll probably wrap up our launch party. But last time we had loads of fun. We had hundreds of people in there just having all sorts of crazy fun, and we did a dragon trivia. I launched a box set. So the box set is also up at 99 cents if people are keen on tasting the world and getting three books for one. You can read everything in Kindle Unlimited. But when we launched the box set, it was absolutely nuts. We did a two-day launch party, and it was, I think Michael and I were both exhausted for a week. And we got Darian Smith on, who's so much fun online, and we did a dragon trivia quiz. So we had all sorts of cool videos, and people had to guess, you know, what characters we were portraying and doing silly things throughout the day. But it was a lot of work telling up all the points. I think it took me a few hours just to add them all up. And the other thing we've got, sorry, I'm raving now. The other thing we've got in my group is we've got an animator, Jerem Sidwell, who has worked for Sir Peter Jackson here in New Zealand, which is how I met Jerem. So he's worked on Avatar, X-Men, Transformers, Tintin, The Hobbit, a whole lot of movies. He's done so many blockbusters. That's just a few of them that I can remember. And he also runs his own animation company now and employs 10 people. So Jerem's coming on, and we're doing an Ask an Animator session. And that will be at, what's the time, ET? At 5:40. Eastern time. Okay. So at 20 to 6 Eastern time today, we'll have Jerem on. So if people want to come over to my Facebook group, they can find the link on the blog and come over, and they can ask Jerem any questions they want about animation, including some of the movies he's worked on. And he's a crazy guy, James.
All right.
It's just nutty. So at the moment, he's doing a push-up challenge for PTSD and anxiety. So people are all doing push-ups, and they're videoing themselves doing 25 push-ups a day. But that's not enough for Jerem. Jerem has done his inner swimming pool, over a river with his hands on the rocks, on top of a playground, on top of some mountains. It's like each day I go and look on his timeline and go, where's he going to do his push-ups today? So he's a really crazy guy with lots of crazy ideas, and he's absolutely creative, just amazing. And when I knew him, he was the sort of person that always had a trail of kids flocking after him because he was doing nutty things like driving around in his van with the kids in car parks, all the kids peeking at the sky roof or sitting on the roof and stuff. It was just like, my kids just thought he was amazing. They loved to hang out with him because he was so much fun. So yeah, that's happening today too.
Yeah, so it's going to be a great time. We'll make sure we have a link included at the bottom of the post where you find the podcast. And you guys should stop by. I'm a member of her group, and it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I'm a member of your group too. It's always fun in your group as well. Thank you very much, yeah. James, for talking today.
Oh, yeah, it was great talking with you. Besides your Facebook group, is there anywhere else on social media people can find you?
I'm on, it's actually hilarious. I'm on Twitter, but I'm never there. Mainly on Facebook, and of course on my blog, and also, they can sign up to my newsletter. So I'll give you that link as well. And then they get, fortnightly updates as to what's going on, which is lots of fun. I'm on Instagram, but the embarrassing thing is I don't have a single post. I have a profile and I have a couple hundred followers and I don't even have a post, and it's been on my to-do list every day. Every week this year, start Instagram, and I haven't had a chance. So I've just been absolutely writing. So I think there's only so much you can do. I love Instagram. I think it's a really cool platform, but I just haven't taken photos of my stuff up there yet. So
Oh, social media and then writing and editing and marketing. It's all a lot. A lot of stuff you have to balance as an indie author.
Yeah, and I have four kids, so even though I'm full-time, it's sort of like kids are a full-time job as well. And even though some of them are older and they've left home, it's like when they turn up, oh, there goes the evening's plans, you know. So
yeah,
you've got to catch them when they're rolling past. So, it's neat. I love my family. I love writing, and I love every aspect of this business. I just wish that I had a few clones so I could because I could do everything. So, but anyway, we'll get there.
That would be wonderful. Well, it was great talking with you, Eileen.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you too, James.
All right. You have yourself a great day.
Yeah, we'll have a great launch party, and maybe we'll see people over there.
That would be great.
Okay, cheers.
Cheers.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.